Blog Talk Radio.
Carol the Coach. Sex, love, and relationships. We talk about it here.
Carol the Coach. Compassion with contemporary relevance.
I am a psychotherapist. I can be your personal life coach, and I can help you with your issues. There are no problems too small or too big. You can talk about anything.
Speaker, columnist, radio TV host, and commentator. Carol the Coach brings messages of wellness and empowerment within reach of everyday people every day.
Almost 5 years ago, I lost my soulmate in an accident. He was killed in a plane crash. Life just for me has seemed to stop.
There are groups all over the city. I mean, I teach one. It is a specific way to start thinking so that you shift how you see the world, which then shifts your energy, and then you feel better and you actually see things differently.
Carol the Coach. Always available to at carolthecoach.com.
Now I've got Russell on the line.
I'm 47 years old. I'm a truck driver. I am married. I have a wife in San Francisco.
Okay.
I haven't been home in 6 months. My thing is, I don't know if I have a sex addiction or what the problem is. Why do I want what I can't have? And as soon as I can have it, I don't want it anymore.
You're right on target when you say, I don't know if I have a sexual addiction. Well, guess what? Yes, you do. And you know what? That's my specialty, Russell. So you're at the right place. Continue.
I meet women online, and I'm in a different part of the country. I travel all 48 states, so I love sex.
I hear self-esteem issues. You never felt good enough, and you didn't feel like you were getting what you should have then, and you're reenacting that now. Do you want to change that about yourself? I got an interesting
email from a man that said, Carol, I know that sexual abuse can create sexual addiction. And I've talked to my 12-step group and they're not buying it. Can you clarify that for me? And so tonight I decided to talk about sexual abuse and how my email was exactly right. You know, there's something called abuse and trauma that contributes to the potentiality for sexual addiction. And that's because it's about sexual trauma reenactment. So tonight we're going to be talking about what is sexual abuse. What is sexual trauma? If you have that as an addict in your past and you believe that you've reenacted that trauma in your life, which has contributed towards the sexual addiction, you'll find the show fascinating. And if you're a partner who has experienced sexual abuse, you may also find this show riveting because we're going to be talking about how you felt, what you did about it, and how oftentimes you reenact the trauma you had as a child by falling in love with someone who traumatizes you too. You know, this show is going to be for the addict and the partner. And so I want you to stay tuned. It's all about me. It's Carol Jurgensen-Cheats. Hi, I'm Carol the Coach. And I don't have a guest tonight. I'm going to be talking about trauma and incest and sexual abuse and how it affects the general public. So if you believe something has happened to you, you're going to want to show up and be a part of the show. Because you know what? It is so interesting that many people have talked about it with other people that they know, but I got to tell you, oftentimes they haven't. I had a man that I was interviewing a couple days ago, and he had been through horrific trauma. When he was 5 years old, his mother's boyfriend was sexually abusing her and being violent against her. And he interfered with their fight, and his mother actually accidentally cut him in trying to protect herself. And his uncle lived with them, And he and his uncle shared a room, and his uncle exploited him. And he did that a variety of ways. He would have prostitutes into their, he would have sex in front of them. And this is at age 5, 6, 8, 10, 12, 16. He would taunt this young man, expect this young man to participate in sexual activity with the prostitutes. Sometimes my client did, and sometimes he didn't. He didn't want to. He knew it was wrong. But he feared for his safety and his life, and so sometimes he did. This man lived in a household where violence was daily. And so he was always watching some of his mother, his aunts, his neighbors, his cousins being sexually abused, being beaten, being physically, emotionally abused. He lived with that every single day of his life. And he never talked to anybody about it. But what he ended up doing was, as he became older and could organize sexual activity, he would exploit prostitutes. He would find women that he called, that he referenced as easy. And he would expect them to perform for him. He reenacted that trauma. This man that I'm working with has incredible potential. He has compassion for other people. He has shame about what he has done. And not only does he want to make it right, but he wants to make his life right so that he no longer experiences the dysfunction that he lived for the last 45 years. And so he is in part one of the reasons I decided to talk about this. I recently gave a presentation on treating the trauma of incest. And, you know, interestingly enough, in the 50s, 60s, 70s, and even early 80s, nobody talked about sexual abuse. And then you might expect what ended up happening is that there was a movie that referenced sexual abuse that got such great ratings that many directors in Hollywood decided to feature sexual abuse as their topic for their television shows, for their movies. And all of a sudden, we had men and women coming out of the woodwork saying, oh my gosh, this happened to me. Now, sexual abuse is actually considered sexual contact or behavior that occurs between individuals where the perpetrator is older, physically bigger, and stronger, and or he or she holds a position of power or authority over the child. And incest is when these behaviors occur between related or quasi-related individuals. So there's this power differential as well as the victim's age and immaturity that precludes informed consent. In other words, even a child that's 15, we know in today's age, a child who's 15 is 21 and 12. That's one of the problems with this society is that it's become overly sexualized. And so we have young kids engaging in sexual activity. And if you didn't know, you'd think they were 21, 22, or 23. But if you really assess them, as I do, you find out they're not 15. They're actually 10, 11, or 12. So what a differential in terms of their age, their behaviors that indicate that they're way older than their age, and their maturity level, which indicates they're way younger than their age. Now, clearly, I have always heard that one out of every three females has been sexually abused, and one out of every 10 men, one out of every 10 males has been sexually abused. And these are reported cases. So, folks, I got to tell you that this is way higher than what's reported. I believe that 40% of all females have been sexually abused. And 25 to 30% of males have been sexually abused. This man that I was referencing today, he had been sexually abused by his uncle. He also sexually abused some of his family members. You know, it's a phenomenon that's very common in families. When something traumatic has happened to you, you don't know how to cope with it, so you take control and you do the same thing to somebody else. So it's like you experience a double load of shame. Shame about having had that experience yourself, knowing it's wrong, being a victim, and not knowing what to do about it, and then becoming angry and doing it to somebody else so that you can feel a sense of control and a sense of mastery and a sense of anger. So I want to tell you that I believe in my experience, and I've worked with the abused population and I've worked with sexual addiction, and I have no doubt that it's higher than what is reported. And I always say in my church groups and in my girlfriend groups and, you know, in my presentations, I say, so, you know, if I'm talking to women, that's at least one out of every third person here in this group. And if I'm talking to men, I think it's about the same. So here's the bad news about sexual abuse. Besides the fact that it's a real violation of one's own private space, one's own sexuality, and one's own self-esteem, whether you be male or female, it really is an intrusion into sacred space that feels dirty and damaged. You know, if you're really young, you know it's wrong, but you're not sure why. If you're older, you know it's wrong because you probably had messages from your family that said, don't touch yourself, don't get undressed in front of other people. You know, you learn that the body is sacred, and it's also shameful to expose it. And unfortunately, when sexual abuse occurs, most children don't tell anybody. So there's this feeling of extreme isolation, feeling damaged. Lots of people report, lots of children report a feeling of being frozen, shut down, or numb. And it actually ruptures that personal, emotional, spiritual, and sexual sense of self. That is the casualty and the collateral damage of sexual abuse. Now, the good news is I have worked with a lot of kids who are very resilient. And if there's one or two people in their life that talks to them about the fact that it's not their fault and teaches them boundaries and sets up the situation to explain that the other person had problems, you know what? Those kids do great. And that was one of my roles. I was a sexual abuse counselor for an entire county. And I worked with the victims, or as I call the survivors, and I worked with the perpetrators, which were typically family members or somebody close to them. And I worked with the family that either were family to the perpetrators and or the children. And what I found was that this program that I ran, actually a program of reconciliation. Instead of these people going to jail, we set up boundaries. And we set up assertiveness training. And these kids were no longer abused. See, if kids learn how to say no and assert themselves, believe it or not, the potential perpetrator will move on. And if the potential perpetrator gets help, that's all they really want. And so I know I'm talking to sex addicts right now and their partners. And I want to say that I believe that if you've been sexually abused, it may be likely that you've violated somebody else's sexual boundaries and you're not bad. You shouldn't feel shame. You should feel guilt. Guilt means you did something wrong, but you shouldn't feel ashamed. And it is really important to know that you have every right to get healthy and to help others with this situation. Now, I got to tell you, for some people who have been sexually abused, they experience what we call big T trauma. And if you've listened to the show, you know that big T trauma are those types of traumas that occur that have huge implications on the survivor. So in other words, survivors that have experienced sexual, physical, and emotional abuse, or they've witnessed horrendous events, you know, for the guy I was speaking about earlier, not only was he abused, but he was exploited, and he witnessed horrendous events. And every day in his home, he experienced violence. And I told him, I said, you know what? I am so, and I use this word a lot. I don't think it's really appropriate for therapists, but I can't help myself. I said, I am so proud of you because you have come for help. You're a good man. You have sexual addiction in your past, but you're here for help. And somebody who went through the trauma you went through should ultimately be a sociopath. They shouldn't have a conscience. They should have shut down. Long-term perpetrators, they might have been in jail. And at best, they might have developed a thought disorder, schizophrenia, bipolar depression. I mean, clearly, this man was very resilient because he went through this stuff. He created some maladaptive behaviors, and he got some help. And he's doing really, really well. So you know the difference between big traumas and little traumas, right? Big traumas, like I said, are sexual, physical, and emotional abuse, you know, domestic violence, witnessing horrendous events, while the little T traumas are traumas like neglect, multiple moves, breakups, and situations that interfere with safety, connection, and trust. Now, if you've heard the show, you know that I trained with Patrick Carnes. I am a certified sexual addiction therapist. And Patrick Carnes actually says, believe it or not, you know, kids that experience sexual abuse and horrendous acts of violence have experienced so much trauma. The kids who have experienced neglect and are invisible and have had their needs ignored throughout their entire childhood, well, they have experienced just as much trauma because they have not been validated in any way, shape, or form, and their wounds aren't physical, and nobody knows that. And they walk around thinking they're nothing. Now, what we know is that for a lot of families, trauma is inevitable. That experiencing trauma in one's childhood or adolescence or even adulthood is inevitable. It's that old adage that I say, you know, shit happens when life gets in your way. And we've all had those experiences. And there are lots of families where there is neglect and substance abuse and poverty and unemployment, mental illness, all sorts of traumatic events that have occurred. And so I'm going to just ask you here. If you're listening to the show, what was your trauma? You know, what did you go through that was fairly traumatic in your childhood? Whether you be a partner, when you work with a certified sexual addictions therapist or a certified clinical partner specialist, you guys know I'm both. I work with partners and I work with sex addicts. We help you work out your trauma in actuality by helping you to draw pictures of that trauma, not the words, the pictures. And so there's this something that I can't remember the woman who developed it, but Patrick Carnes actually uses it in his training. It's called a trauma egg. And it's where you use symbols, images, and pictures that have occurred in your home that made you feel unsafe and unconnected. If you're an addict, I always say that if you're working with a partner, it is important for you to reestablish safety, security, and stabilization in your home. It is your job to make your partner feel safe and secure. If you're a sex addict and you didn't have that in your home, you may not be able to do that. I get that. So, oftentimes in therapy, we do. We ask people to do a trauma egg, where they actually draw pictures of the traumas that they experienced in their life. Because here's what we know to be true, that if you've experienced a lot of trauma in your life, more than likely you'll unconsciously reenact that trauma on somebody else. You'll do it because it's familiar and it's predictable. And you'll do it because you want some sense of control because you never had control as a child. And it will play itself out until you're no longer able to tolerate the patterns of behavior, or you get busted. You get busted by the police, you get busted at work, you get busted by your wife, you get busted by your husband. And by that I mean you're discovered for the reenactment. And it shakes you back into reality and you say, whoa, I have got to get healthy. I can no longer be this individual. I want more in my life. And actually, trauma reenactment is such a strong drive that almost, we say that a crisis almost always has to invariably happen before somebody has the ability to get out from underneath it. You know, because when your emotional trauma is not resolved, unfortunately, there's a great propensity to attract further trauma into your life. And then that pattern is repeated, and then you create generational patterns which set up families for more of the same. Now, most of you know that, you know, I have been certified by APSATS, APSATS, and that is an organization that certifies clinically partner-sensitive, trainers. And we are therapists that work with a partner, and we tell the partner, hey, you know, if you've hooked up with a sex addict, this is not your fault. You didn't contribute to it, you didn't cause it, and you certainly can't cure it. But here's what I want to tell you. From a marital standpoint, one thing I know to be true is oftentimes this propensity to attract further trauma into one's life is repeated over and over and over again until people get healthy. And I said that oftentimes it's predictable and familiar. So I would never call a partner a co-addict, ever, ever, ever. But I do believe from a marital standpoint that sometimes partners who have been in abusive relationships attract abusers so that they can get healthy and as an adult resolve some of the trauma that they experienced as a kid. You know, and they can teach themselves safety. Unfortunately, so often, whether you're an addict or a partner, it was really your mother's responsibility to keep you safe. Not fair, I know it. You know, dads are the protectors. One would expect them to keep you safe. But mothers have this incredible instinct to know right from wrong, to know when somebody's in harm. So we always say that the mother is key to the safety plan. And in healthy relationships, mothers set boundaries and check in with their children to make sure they stay safe. Now, I want to tell you, as you're listening to this show tonight, there is this thing called the Still Face Experiment. You can Google it. And it is a mother who is bonding with her child, and then she is told, it's only 3 minutes long, and then she is told to absolutely act devoid of any emotions, not respond to the child, but act numb and blank. And you watch this little child who's been playing with her mother and smiling and laughing and reaching out to her. You know, she's pre-verbal. She's probably under the age of 1. And then the mother goes blank and she just does not respond to the child at all. And the baby tries to get the mother's attention and she can't get the attention. And then she starts to squeal and scream and reach out for the mother and the mother doesn't move. And the baby absolutely freaks out. Children need to know that their mother can keep them healthy and happy and safe. And you and I both know that many of you grew up in families where you didn't have that. This is not to blame your mother, but your mother and father weren't there for you. And you had to be the parent at age 7, 8, 9, and 10. Not fair at all. And I know that. But that is the way it can happen. You know, so I always say moms have to be the key to safety. You know, mothers in general do that better. And I'm sure that will change as we become more and more evolved and men and women continue to do the role of caretaking. But I always say that moms have that innate ability because they gave birth. And that is so important in terms of knowing who you can enlist to get healthy. When children have been abused and they grow up and they develop sexual addiction, or they grow up and they fall in love with a sex addict and the abuse continues because sexual reenactment occurs and addicts act out and partners are more and more traumatized, as are the addicts. That can evolve from anxiety and stress into post-traumatic stress disorder. And those people can have flashbacks and not be able to sleep and have heart palpitations. And the triggers occur when something very connected happens and or unconnected happens. And then, you know, what we do know from many partners of sex addicts is that they experience post-traumatic stress, but if they have had their own trauma in their childhood and school-age years leading up to adolescence, they have complex trauma. That's the same for the man I described. You know, his entire life was not safe or stable, and he experienced so much trauma that he has something called complex trauma, and that is when trauma stressors are interpersonal traumatization, and it causes reactions in the victim that are impersonal and secretive. For instance, this man has never told his 12-step group anything that he's ever been through. He doesn't know if it's safe, so he's not going to take the risk. We know that kids that grow up in addiction, any kind of addiction, learn how not to talk, trust, or feel. And they end up experiencing trauma stressors that affect how their body reacts, that affects how they look at the world, and they experience triggers, somatic recall, which is all of a sudden the body gets chilled or starts to shake. They experience euphoric recall. They may have enjoyed some of the sexual abuse even though they hated it, and so all of a sudden they have orgasmic pleasure. They may have flashbacks. They may have night terrors. And it leaves them feeling a lot of discomfort and inability to relax. It causes restlessness, lots of irritability, and discontent. And that's how kind of the ghosts of the past show up in an adult. So because it affects the parasympathetic nervous system, it adversely affects a client's ability to relax. They don't know what relaxation is. They don't know what serenity is. They don't know what comfort is. Their brain is on high alert, and the amygdala is overworked. And, you know, you've heard me talk about it before. They experience a fight, flight, or freeze emotion. And so here we have a partner who just found out that her husband is a sex addict. And she goes into freeze mode. And she doesn't want to have sex. And she doesn't want to relax into the relationship. And, you know, I've had so many addicts say, my gosh, my wife has never, ever been violent, and she has beat me. She has hit me. She has tried to throw me down the stairs. I can't believe that she's so evil. And I explain, you know what? Her brain is in that fight, flight, or freeze mode, and you're in the fight stage. And she is protecting herself. She's reacting with the three things that she can do. She either freezes and numbs out and immobilizes, she fights you, or she flees. She says, get the hell out of here. I don't want you to sleep in this bed. I want you to leave tonight. I want you to go to a hotel. That's always really tough. And whether you're the addict and you've experienced this kind of abuse, or you're the partner and you've experienced this trauma, there's always this hypervigilance. You know, you're always waiting to see who's going to hurt you next. This anxiety occurs as secondary to the escape, fight, or flight thought. There's lots of invasive thoughts. And the invasive thoughts have to do with safety. They are either about the self, I'm hopeless, I'm a failure, I'll never be normal, or they're about the inadequacy. You know what? I'm a bad person. I'm never going to live a normal life. I might as well die. And, you know, when I work with clients like this, I ask them to neutralize some of those feelings, whether they're the addict or the partner, and I ask them to come up with 50 personality strengths that help to neutralize their self-hatred and loathing, and ask them to describe themselves. Now, think about this for a second. If I asked you, the listener, to come up with 50 personality strengths to describe yourself, and they have to be positive, could you do it? Could you do 5? Could you do 10? You know, if I were going to tell you right now, and I know it's not going to sound humble, I know it's going to sound like I'm tooting my own horn, I would tell you that I am tenacious, I'm persistent, I'm disciplined, I'm generous, I'm loving, I'm compassionate, I'm caring. I can't say I'm totally honest. You know, all the time I'm looking at my taxes going, ooh, I could claim that. And you and I both know that being in the program means rigorous honesty. It's not, hey, I can cheat on my taxes, but I won't cheat on my wife, right? So can you come up with some words that describe who you are? And can they be positive? That's the assignment that I'm going to give you. Because it really helps to know what your strengths are. So when you're putting yourself down, you're feeling self-loathing, you're feeling like you're never going to come out of this, you can make it work. It's a hard exercise, but it's an easy exercise. And I got to tell you, if you want more of those kind of exercises, you can always go to my, I have two websites. One is carolthecoach.com, and it has workbooks that I've created to help improve your self-esteem. And then I have 6 help with Carol the Coach. And I have books there that deal specifically with sexual addiction and being a partner. This exercise that I have, that I came up with, is out of my creative coaching manual and Create Your Own Life manual. It's an excellent opportunity for you to improve your self-esteem, for you to improve your sense of thinking, for you to move from fatalistic to futuristic, you know, so that you don't just think about, oh, I'm a screw up and it's never going to get better. You say to yourself, you know what? I am en route to make the best of my life, and here's how I'm going to do it. I'm a believer in tooting your own horn. I'm a believer in knowing what your strengths are and being able to tell people that. You know, when people say to me, Carol, you're an amazing therapist, I say, thank you. I've worked hard to be the therapist that I hope you would want me to be. I don't sit there and say, oh, no, I'm not. Don't say that about me. You don't know me, because I own it. I own my power, and it's important for you to own your power, too. You do have power. I promise you that. You have been through a lot, and you're strong, and you're resilient. Got to know your strengths, even if you're sitting there thinking, I'm nothing but a you-know-what F-up. Okay. And, you know, we know that sex addicts and oftentimes their partners have intimacy disorders. They can't get close. But when you've come to therapy and you're willing to work on yourself, you have initiated that process. You are working on developing intimacy and getting healthier. And don't think so much about your past. Think about what you're doing for your future. And that is what counts. You know, you may think that your life is the worst, and you may actually say, you know, I've never been able to derive comfort from another human being, or I don't have any support systems. I always ask people, who are your support systems? Who are your best friends? Who do you know that would say positive things about you? And if you say no one, then let's get you into a group where you can find that. Because you deserve to develop trust and intimacy. You may not have had that as a kid, but you deserve that as an adult. It is time for you to let go of the depression and shame, the trauma addiction. It's time for you to stop acting out, stop feeling suicidal. Time for you to live. I'm a big believer in reframing. Reframing is that life skill that says, okay, I've been through a lot. I've made mistakes. Sometimes I feel like a screw-up. But what have those experiences taught me? You know, how have I grown stronger from those? If you remember Patrick Collins's interview with me, he said true recovery is when you've experienced suffering and that suffering has been transformed into greater things. And then he said that 12th step of the 12-step program, that giving back, that's teaching others, that mentoring, that's what life's all about. That's what I'm doing. You know, my life is about helping others. Now, does that mean that I don't take care of myself? Heck no. You know, when you've experienced trauma and abuse, it is your duty to take care of yourself, to create self-nurturing, to decide what makes you happy. That is your duty. And when I talk to somebody and say, hey, what do you do to find joy or purpose or passion, and they can't help me, wow, that's a few sessions waiting to happen. Because you deserve that. You deserve to feel happy, deserve to feel like you're living a purpose, and you deserve that sense of passion. So do you believe that you are a victim or a survivor? Okay, now there is a right answer here. If you don't see yourself as a survivor, then I want you to look at your past and say, well, you know, let's do this. Think of a situation that you've encountered that was difficult and it required some resiliency. What did it teach you and how did you grow stronger? I'm going to ask you that again. What did it teach you and how did you grow stronger from it? Because that will take you from victim to survivor. And you'll see how you can be empowered. And then the second thing I would ask you is, what can you do in your own life to set some safety in your relationships with others? I really believe in relationship building. I was talking with a man today, and he was starting to date, and he told his girlfriend of 4 days. I said, Donnie, I tell you to go slow. You know, don't have sex for a long time. Don't divulge too much information. Spread out your dates. So what does he do? He meets a woman. They go out 4 days in a row. And he tells her all about his sex addiction. And then she divulges a secret that no one has ever known about but Donnie. Okay, well, he sure didn't follow my rules, but that's beside the point. Now he has to set a situation of safety and containment for her. And so he said, you know, it's weird. She shared all that information with me last night, and she hasn't texted me much today. And when she has, it's been one-word answers, and I'm scared. And I said, would you please tell her you're scared? You're frightened that she shared too much, and now she's running, and you don't want her to run because you really enjoy her and the time you spend with her. Keep it about you. Let her know that you really admire her. And see, when you work on intimacy, that's about sharing yourself with somebody. That's relationship building. Now, again, they're moving too fast. I guarantee you they are. But will their relationship make it? Shoot, only time will tell. And I'm going to be right with him as he discovers whether that works or not for him. It's certainly a good sign that she's never told anybody else whatever she told him. However, oftentimes when people have huge secrets, they flee when they've shared them with other people. And so, if you've experienced abuse, whether you're the addict or the partner, it's important for you to understand it. It's important for you to keep your self-esteem. It's important for you to develop trust, to have good boundaries, to have a connectedness to yourself and your body. And it's really important for you to spend a lot of time in self-care. So what do you do for self-care? You know, do you take bubble baths? Do you participate in exercise? Do you work with woodworking? Do you make jewelry? Do you garden? Do you sing? Are you in the choir? You know, what do you do to relax and to feel good about you? Self-nurturance is an important part of self-care. And it's really the cornerstone for who you are and the work that you do regarding trauma. It really helps establish that sense of safety. Because truly, when you've experienced exploitation, sexual addiction, sexual abuse, manipulation, it's important as an adult to reduce any symptomatology you feel and to learn how to control your feelings. And it's important for you to know that you can use deep breathing with visualization to calm down, that you have enough skills to handle difficult situations, that the tools you have will assist you in keeping yourself safe. And that's why, you know, I know you've probably heard me say this before. If you're in an abusive relationship and you assert yourself with that person, that probably is not safe, and that could create more physical harm. So you've got to be able to assess the situation and decide, you know, is your safety going to be in self-care, or is your safety going to be in setting boundaries and being assertive and learning how to communicate? Truly, you have to be able to regulate your emotions, control your anxiety, and not move into the feelings of flight, fight, and freezing. And you have to walk into some of the fear and know that it's safe. Now, I get it. If you're a partner and you're with an addict, it probably doesn't feel safe right now. But here's what I'm going to ask you to do. If you're with an addict and he's been working a program and he's been making progress, that is an important thing to notice. And I know that you'll be scared and you won't want to trust it. You don't want to get hurt again. But you've got to notice the progress. And if you're an addict and you really are learning how to curtail masturbation or you're acting out behaviors, you're really working on your communication, then you need to give yourself kudos for that. You're creating a sense of safety and stabilization. And that is so important. I can't highlight that enough because truly you have to do to be able to continue to work on yourself. It means checking in with yourself all the time. You know, interestingly enough, in my group, I say, hey, check in about your five primary feelings. Which one do you feel the most? Anger, sadness, loneliness, fear, or happiness? And we do that because addicts and partners alike have not been in touch with their feelings. So right now, as you're listening to this podcast, how do you feel? Do you feel more? Do you feel sadness, anger, fear, loneliness, or happiness? If you can identify which feeling you're feeling, and maybe you say, hey, I feel upset. Well, tell me, is upset more about anger or is it more about sadness? You know, I want you to keep it to the five feelings because it's a lot easier to manage when you do that. You've got to check in with yourself because you have to stay connected to who you are. And I got to tell you that when you're able to do that, then you're en route to working on your intimacy. Now, if you want some good materials on trauma, I definitely want to recommend these. The Body Keeps Score by Bessel van der Kolk. It's the Bible. Chasing Codependency by Pia Melody. Healing Trauma, Restoring the Wisdom of the Body by Peter Levine. The Drama of the Gifted Child, The Body Remembers by Rothschild, and Trauma Through a Child's Eyes by Magyar Klein and Peter Levine. Those are all excellent books that deal with trauma. Remember, trauma equals fear. And clients stay stuck in fear. And so if you're an addict or a partner, you're probably stuck in fear. And trauma work allows you to touch that experience and return to normal so that you learn how to master your own discomfort and grow from it and recognize what your strengths are. You've heard me talk about EMDR, eye movement desensitization reprocessing, and that's a great way to work on trauma. Find yourself a CSAT, a certified sexual addiction therapist. Find yourself an APSAT therapist. Remember, they're certified clinical specialists. Don't do it on your own, but get to an expert. Go to sexhelp.com. To find the CSAT, go to the APSATS directory, APSATS. And you can always email me at carol@carolthecoach.com. I changed my email. It's no longer carolthecoach@AOL.com. It's carol@carolthecoach.com. You can go to my website, sexhealthwithcarolthecoach.com, and you can subscribe to all these podcasts. You can go to my YouTube channel where I teach addicts and partners 5 and 10 minute life skills. You can get my book where you're donating every bit of proceeds to AFAR, which is the American Federation of Addiction Research, called Sexual Addiction, Wisdoms from the Masters. Or you can go to my Carol the Coach website, since I have two, and get that Carol the Coach manual so you can start working on these life skills. What's super important is that you continue to work on yourself and you not do it alone. You go to Ethanon, you go to COSA, you go to Sexaholics Anonymous, you go to Sex Addicts Anonymous, Celebrate Recovery. You find support. You know, because there will only be one of you at all times, and I fearlessly want you. Fearlessly want you to be yourself. I so appreciate you finding out about trauma tonight, and we'll catch you next week for another show. Please email me and let me know what you need, what you want, what topics you want us to talk about. So this show is all about you. And how often do professionals say that? You know, it's all about you. You're listening to Carol Jurgensen Chief. I'm Carol the Coach. And this was Sex Health with Carol the Coach on Blog Talk Radio. We'll see you next week.